Moving on to the third one, devotion-based imama. These are slightly better ones, you know, they're like ethical and moral excellence of the imams. It means something to them. You know, they're like, no. Imams had really good akhlaq, right? Their value system was good. So they would actually praise imams because of their akhlaqi models that they have presented or akhlaqi values that they have presented. They're also impressed by the knowledge of imams, du'as of imams, alhamdulillah. They commemorate the wilada and shahada of the imams, right? They, you know, kind of perform these welfare. They have a lot of interest in, you know, being beneficial for others, other mu'mineen. So they do a lot of welfare work as well, right? This is another category. But then they confine the entire scope of imama to these things predominantly. They focus only on these few dimensions of this entire institution of imama. These are all good things. Even in the previous slides, like I said in my disclaimer, that some things are good. We all do that, alhamdulillah. All Shias do that. All fuqaha do that. All maraja do that. But not all things, right? So here, what this category does is, it confines the scope of imama to these 3, 4, 5 things. They limit the scope of imama. And their goal generally is to perform some ritualistic ibadat, right? Nawafil and, you know, the shabhaya qadr, masalan. All the ritualistic ibadat that Islam has given us. And the intention is to gain sawab, gain reward. And in some cases, this category also performs some self-made rituals. And they give those self-made rituals the same level of importance in some cases. Again, their goal is to make imams happy so they could grant us our desires in both worlds. They seek intercession of the imams to enter paradise relatively easily. Because I've done such khairat, I've done this donation, I've done this good act, so I'm going to get discounts on my way, right? Alhamdulillah. Then, you know, they follow some ethical and moral advices of the imams, alhamdulillah rabbil alameen, where it does not risk their worldly benefits. So they follow some of the ethical and moral advices of the imams where it does not risk their worldly benefits. Again, they're limiting the scope of imama and following imama. As long as it's not going to be harmful for me, man haziram. But as soon as I see that there is some sort of a risk in supporting imama, in following the footsteps of imama, then man hazir nistam dige. I'm not in the arena. So this is, you know, the third category and their goals. Generally, their believers or general masses somewhat knowledgeable about the biography of the imams and their teachings. So good thing is, you know, they do know. They're familiar with imams and their lives and especially their akhlaqi ahadith and so on and so forth. You ask them during the time of occultation, what are we supposed to do? What's the plan for the ummah? What are the Shia supposed to do? They usually consider Islam to be the affair of the hereafter only. In other words, they say, gather as much sawab as you can. Gather as many hasanat, perform as many hasanat as you can. The more sawab you have in your bag, the better off you're going to be in your journey in the hereafter. So generally, their take from Islam is in the hereafter. And then, you know, you ask them, what are we supposed to do during occultation? They say, believing in imama will help us in the hereafter only. I'm talking about the time when we're living in occultation. They'd be like, no, it's, you know, on the other side of the fence, when we go, we're just going to use this wild card of imama. And all those scary things are going to stop happening, right? While we're on this side of the fence, imama has no implications, really, for all practical purposes, right? And this is where the last sentence is. Again, the same sentence. During the major occultation, imama is predominantly dysfunctional, non-operational, and suspended for all practical purposes.